Hi everyone, how you guys doing? My name is Matt Jarboe. Welcome to Milk Carton Mysteries for the 9th of December 2020. I would like to apologize for not posting yesterday. I can actually explain, and it's fascinating. So what happened was a few months ago, I covered a missing persons case out of Missouri where the person who was missing is a guy by the name of Mark Fullerton. And his girlfriend is being accused by his family for having been involved in the disappearance. And I covered that. And there was some other speculation that people had said around the town on Facebook that it ended up being very, very accusatory. And the girlfriend did not care for that. So she actually reached out to me, wanted to tell me her side of the story. We had a 77-minute conversation last night that I had intended to post today. Unfortunately, there were some wires that were crossed in regards to that information. And so out of respect for her and to keep ethical practices afloat, I have chosen to not air that information until I have permission to do so. So with any luck, I'll be able to post that. I really hope I'll be able to post that. It is a very interesting conversation, and I know you guys would like to hear it, but we might have to do a second interview and everything else. So that's why it wasn't ready to go. An episode wasn't ready to go today. By the time that whole thing was done, I just did not have time to look into more cases to quickly put together an episode. So today, we're back, but there we have it. Additionally, if you guys want to help support the show, head over to Instagram.com/milkcartoncast. We're now over 121 followers. That's awesome. Thank you all so much. Be sure to also check out Facebook.com/groups/themilkcarton. I should really just buy like a domain for that, something a little bit easier, but we'll get to that eventually. In the meantime, that's the show. That's the pitch for the socials. There's always patreon.com/MattJarboe. If you want to help out, it's the holiday season. But let's dive right in, because today we're going to be talking about a terrible story. A couple terrible stories out of Florida, actually. There's always bad things in Florida, let's be fair. But in this particular situation, you've got a mother and her infant gunned down in a terrible display of brutality. That is something that's going on out there. You have two truck drivers that were found bound, beaten, and shot in an abandoned home in Florida. Another guy in California decapitated his children. Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck? This is the world we live in, folks. This is the world we live in. It doesn't get any better, but we will talk about it because these are stories of merit that I think need to be discussed when we talk about mental health and things like that. So let's dive right into the first story here. And that, of course, is the woman and her infant killed in double homicide in Gainesville, Florida. Shelby Mathis, 26 years old, and her 3-month-old son, Gideon, were shot and killed by Gideon's father, Keevy Ellis. Yeah, he has now been arrested by police, and they're believing it's a double homicide. Oh, no, I'm pretty sure at this point it's pretty apparent. It is exactly what you think it is. So this is what the article says. When officers arrived, the man whose relationship with the victims wasn't confirmed at the time. He's the baby daddy, let's be fair. He's the father of the boy that he killed. Allegedly. Was found in the streets still firing shots when the police showed up and took him into custody. Shelby and Gideon were found dead at two different locations on the property, both with multiple gunshot wounds. And that's kind of the report. The reports are coming in right away that he had shot Shelby. People had seen it happen, and they called the authorities. Now, the arrest report said that Ellis was seen firing the gunshots as she held the baby in the front yard. So he shot her while she was holding their son. The woman fell to the ground as Ellis continued to shoot her. Police said he then picked up the baby, who was shot in the head, and put his body in the backyard near a dog kennel. Now, that has been kind of disputed on social media from people who were there. People who were there, who were either witnesses or at least talked to someone who was more there, they have said that he didn't just like gently pick up the body of the boy and walk over to the dog kennel and put it down, that he picked up the body of the boy and he threw it in the dog kennel. Now, I can only ascertain, I can only theorize that there might have been, because the question of why is a big one, and I can only theorize and speculate and tinfoil a bit that it's possible that it might have been his belief that this wasn't his child. Because when you treat something like that, you are literally throwing it away. You have no connection to it. There is no love to it. You know, like I have a 15-month-old daughter and I have a 3-year-old daughter. And at no point do I not just love them unconditionally. I know they're my kids. You know, I know they're my daughter. So that's how I'm approaching this when I'm reading this, is like, that's my interpretation. But anyway, when the cops actually arrived, Ellis was seen walking down the street and firing shots at his neighbor, who thankfully was able to escape unhurt. He immediately dropped the gun and was taken into custody. So I just have to point this out. Until the cops got there, this guy had no problem killing two people and then opening fire on a neighbor. But as soon as he sees the red and blue, the flashing lights of a squad car, he drops the gun, hands go up. Okay, guys, take me in. What? I know there's due process, and we have due process for a very good reason, and authorities have to investigate. I get that. But it's like, you look at the horrific acts. People, there's eyewitness testimony that this dude did it. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure you're thinking the same thing I'm thinking. I don't want to get too crazy with it, but there is that. Multiple shell casings were found around the property. And here's the worst part of it. They weren't the only two people in the house, Shelby and Gideon. There were two more children, a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old who were related to the mother. So she had three kids, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 3-month-old. And they were still in the house when this whole thing went down. They heard everything. And they are now with their grandmother. They've been taken to the grandmother's for care after the incident. And I can only hope, I mean, I only hope to God that they end up getting just the best mental health care they could get. How are they going to process 5 and 3? They're too young to fully get it. The 5-year-old's going to get it better than the 3-year-old, but still, man, what the hell? So here's what we know, what Ellis is saying. He's making erratic statements to the police at this point. So what does that tell you? Like, this guy's clearly off his rocker. The report says here that he repeatedly told law enforcement officers that he was sorry and that he wanted to call Shelby's parents to apologize. And he also admitted to killing them both. So if we look at this from like an act of rage perspective, given the amount of violence, him shooting her multiple times while she's holding the baby is killed, she is killed, she falls to the ground, he shoots her again while she's on the ground, picks up the body of the child, puts it in the kennel or throws it in the dog kennel, depending on which version of events you want to believe, and then goes back and shoots her again. This man was mad. This man was furious. And I can think of only really like one thing that would do it, and that would be like the parentage of the child. You know, who is the boy's real father, sort of thing. That's my take on it. But here's what we know. The relationship between Keavy Ellis and Shelby Mathis goes back quite a ways. Shelby recently, you know, she graduated in 2013. So in 2014, when she was just 19 years old, Ellis was actually arrested for violence against her. They were dating at the time, and he beat the crap out of her. You know, he beat her to hell. So much so that when she was taken to the hospital, she was found to have a lacerated liver, fractured rib, bruises, and swelling on her face, arms, legs, and torso. And he got house arrest for a year for beating the hell out of this woman. House arrest for a year. That's some pretty severe domestic violence. So that's insane to me. At this point, a GoFundMe has been set up for the family by friends who are very distraught on the situation from what I've been reading, and very much as they should be. And I really hope, you know, that they get everything they need. I really do. This is a terrible story. It's absolutely tragic. It's disgusting. And it's one of those things where, again, it's absolutely avoidable. When I talked earlier about mental health, don't get me wrong, I'm not placing any blame on anyone other than Keavy Ellis based upon witness testimony here, witness statements who have seen him do this act. But what you have is a situation where you have a guy who is making erratic statements. He's clearly not all the way there. You know, we need better mental health in this country. And he already has a violent streak, as evidenced by 6 years earlier when he put her in the hospital. And then she still went back to him, which I'm not going to shame her for it. There's no point in it at this particular junction. And it's not right to do anyway. I get it. You love who you love, even if they're the most damaging person on the planet to you. But I feel for those kids, man. I feel for that 5-year-old and that 3-year-old. That's so terrible and tragic. I hope they get so much money and that they don't have to worry about anything. But the reality of the situation is that's probably not likely. And that's the saddest thing, man. I hope they get the mental health that they need. They're going to need so much help. I just hope they get it. That's where I'm at with this one. But okay, let's go and jump over to California to talk about another father who killed his children, because that seems to be a pattern. But this one's really weird. So Lancaster, California, this man has been charged with murder and decapitation of his teenage son and daughter. Murder and decapitation. But again, the story just gets weirder. So this guy, his name is Maurice Jewell Taylor Sr., 34-year-old personal trainer, who is well-liked, who is well-respected, you know? Like, the thing, and I'll talk about, like, how it all kind of came to pass, how it was discovered, but, like, he had been doing Zoom meetings with sessions with people to help keep them in shape during the shutdown, and they had no idea that he had done any of this, right? So that's the weirdest thing. So right now he's being arraigned on 2 felony counts each for murder and child abuse under circumstances likely to cause great bodily injury or death. He is accused of murdering his 12-year-old son and his 13-year-old daughter, who were decapitated. Now, the decapitation is the thing that's just still, I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around it, no pun intended. Because, like, why would you? But then from there, it continues. So these kids were found dead at 7:50 a.m. last Friday in the family's home. This is coming in from Sheriff's Deputy Eric Ortiz, who said that both children had apparent lacerations and stab wounds. The victims were taken to the L.A. County Coroner's Office and identified as Maurice Taylor Jr., 12, and Malaka Taylor, 13. So those are their names, and that's terrible. Lancaster Mayor Rex Parris told the LA Times that the youngsters were decapitated, and the district attorney's office confirmed that account. So we now know for certain that they were decapitated. But the question then becomes, how long were they decapitated? How long were they dead before the authorities were notified of this, right? Or the authorities were able to figure it out. Well, that's kind of up for debate right now, because that information hasn't been released. But they'd been there a while. They'd actually been there a while. So what we know about Maurice Taylor is that he's a physical therapist, right? And he'd been conducting the sessions via Zoom, as I had said. Now, one of his clients had called the authorities about a potential gas leak at Taylor's residence when they couldn't reach him for their scheduled appointments in the week leading up to the discovery. So he had a client who he had missed a couple scheduled appointments with. That person, afraid that something might have happened, called the authorities, thankfully, to report a potential gas leak and to do more or less a wellness check on the family, make sure everything is fine. Cops get there, fire department gets there, And they discover the children's bodies are in different rooms. Now, in the house at the time was Maurice, the children's mother, and the two other kids, because there were two other kids that were in there. Now, one of the reports from a neighbor, and again, this is Facebook stuff, even with the last thing I talked about, Facebook commentary, someone had said that the two other kids were in dog cages, that they were in dog cages in the rooms where their siblings were killed. Now, I don't know how true that is. That is something that I read. Take that with a grain of salt, you know, all complete speculations, allegations, whatever. But that's a wild allegation. And the fact that these, you know, the mom had been there, the dad who had killed them and decapitated them was there for days. What went on in that house? What went on in that house? That's what I don't know. But anyway, this is, so the mom, all right, you might be asking yourself, well, is the mom involved? Does the mom have anything to do with this? Well, we don't know yet. However, she was sent to the hospital because she had difficulty breathing while she was being questioned by homicide detectives, like a panic attack is my interpretation of that. So she had a panic attack, in which case she absolutely lost, you know, she's losing her mind. So she freaks out because maybe the reality of the situation is setting in. Maybe the reality of you sitting in a home with two decapitated teenage children for days while you had other two kids that maybe or maybe didn't know what happened with a madman who lost his mind and decapitated his children. Of course, she's going to have a panic attack when the reality of the situation sets in. Maybe it's going to be followed up by life in prison or potentially even the death penalty. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a bit too ahead of myself here, but I mean, come on. Come on. So here's what we know right now in regards to potential time in prison. According to this article, well, according to the LA County District's office, District Attorney's Office, Maurice could face up to 57 years and 4 months to life in prison if convicted as he's currently charged. So 57 years and 4 months to life for the killing and decapitation of his children. He's 34 years old. Let's say he gets 57 years, you know, he won't make it 57 years. No, not at all. But still, come on. This is a guy. They had to wheel him out of the house, by the way. There are photos and videos of him. They had to put him in a gurney on a stretcher and wheel him out of the house. This guy was not right. I mean, clearly something snapped. Is it COVID? Is it a COVID lockdown? This happened right around the time of the new restrictions in LA. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I don't know. But I feel like mental health was somehow involved in this. And I find myself like wanting to feel sympathy for someone with mental health problems. But when you take your two eldest children and you kill them and you decapitate them, I don't really have the strongest sense of sympathy for you. I'm sorry. But I still think we should, if that's the reason that he just snapped, it just once again shows you that a lot of these situations are probably preventable if it wasn't so taboo to get some mental health, to get some help. But then again, I feel like if you're listening to this, the likelihood of me preaching to the choir is probably pretty high. All right, let's go to the final story of the day. This is the weird one coming out of Florida, where two truckers were killed, tortured, or kidnapped, tortured, and killed. Execution style. That's the headline from a local news report, saying here that investigators are trying to find out who kidnapped, tied up, tortured, and fatally shot two truckers execution style in Opa-locka over the weekend. This is, again, Opa-locka, Florida. So the victims in question are Osmar Olivier, Johan Gonzalez Quesada, and another man who was beaten and shot point blank and dumped on the 1800 block of Rutland Street Saturday night. So he was shot point blank, but he lived from the sounds of it. So they thought he was dead. They left him for dead, but he survived, which might be the key to this whole thing. So these guys were just like, you know, they were just kidnapped, tortured, beaten, and killed. Was it Osmar Olivia owned the Olivia Delivery Corporation, which was headquartered in Opa-locka. Gonzalez Caseta was a father of two daughters, including a one-year-old and a baby girl born just 10 days ago. Just 10 days ago, man. That's absolutely terrible. The Miami-Dade homicide detectives right now are trying to find any kind of explanation as to why this happened. They're stumped, but here's what they're saying. Multiple law enforcement sources say that masked men kidnapped the trio, bound them by the hands, tortured them for hours in the back of a moving type truck. One by one, each was shot in the head and then dumped in the yard of a home at where they found them. So they found all of them there. So they were tortured in the van, shot out, whatever. And the surviving victim managed to flag down a passerby who called the cops. And this is where the article gets a little bit interesting, because they're trying to obviously find a way to establish why this happened, you know, like maybe what this whole thing was. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of think it's somewhat connected, to be fair. The reporter says Miami-Dade police arrested these guys because they've had brushes with the law before involving cases of cargo theft. So the Miami-Dade police arrested Olivia in 2007 after officers said he was one of three men found unloading cargo off of a stolen tractor trailer that had been located using a GPS device. But the following year, prosecutors dropped the charges against him. Gonzalez Quesada, on the other hand, was arrested last year on accusations that he had two loads of pilfered cargo, frozen shrimp, and air conditioning units that had been traced via GPS on stolen tractor trailers. The cargo was discovered at his home, according to the report, and he had pleaded not guilty and was awaiting trial. Now, it feels like these things are connected somehow. And I'm sure we're going to find out more as time goes on, but this is just a crazy story. This is just a crazy what the hell story going on in Florida. And so now the hunt begins to figure out how this happened. Will the authorities be able to figure it out? Will someone talk? What's going to be the chatter on the Facebook feed with the family? I don't know. But it's going to be it's crazy stuff. And this is one that I literally just came across tonight. I'm like, oh my God. You know, this is some bad stuff. So as always, I'm curious to hear your thoughts and your opinions on the three stories I covered today. You guys can let me know over on Instagram at MilkCartonCast, if I could remember it properly, or on Facebook.com/groups/TheMilkCarton. I look forward to hearing you guys' feedback. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. I'm still trying to get Stitcher worked out there. It's a pain in the ass, I'm just saying right now. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have yourself a great day. Thank you again for listening, and peace the hell out.